Hey everyone, I'm Joel Hubbard, and I am thrilled to be with you guys today.
Yeah, today we get to do the Enneagram panel number 2. I guarantee you, you have 2s in your life, and they have probably taken care of you at some point in time.
Ain't that the truth? Yes, we are leaving the body triad. We've been doing the 8, 9s, and 1s, and these are action-oriented people. Now we're moving towards people who are also action-oriented. They move in action, but they move from the space of the emotions now. You're starting to get to people that have that feeling to them. They're warm types. They care about you. They want to know how you feel, particularly this type, the 2, is they want to know how you are doing from the inside out, and they want to know how they can help. They're quick to respond to that. And so you find 2s everywhere. They're the people that everybody loves around them because they're so helpful. But what you're also going to hear is why the 2 is so helpful, and then how we can work with them to help them discover also who they are, and what do they want, and what do they need? How can we help them?
Like I said on the previous panel, we did have some audio issues recording the night of the 1 and the 2, but some of the content was so good we wanted to keep it. But one of the other unique things about this podcast is the only one we have, which is on the 2 panel, we had someone who I had identified as a 2, came on the 2 panel, but was actually not a 2. And so it'll be interesting if you can actually spot it, because listening back to it as I was editing it, you could tell an energetic difference, a motivation difference that was slight, and it came across. And so it'll be interesting to see if you can spot it, and then I'll give the reveal at the end of the episode.
Yeah. And by the way, when we say this person wasn't a 2, it's not us saying to that person, you're not a 2. It's them finally coming to the place of recognizing on their own, I'm not a 2.
Right. Yeah.
So, and
because as people will talk about throughout the podcast, and if you're familiar with the Enneagram, you know that the numbers go to different other numbers in health and in stress. And so sometimes people they misdiagnose themselves. They see themselves differently. And then over time, as they do their work, they get to know themselves more. And they get a better and more clear view of themselves. Like, so if you've taken a test and you feel like you might know what your number is, it could be right and it could be completely wrong. Because a lot of times it's as you do the work, as you try on a number and you go, oh, I think this feels like me. The first time I took a test, I had a 6-way tie.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it was very different. But as I've gotten to know the motivations, as I try things on and as you do the work, you start to develop that capacity to realize, oh, I'm actually coming from this other motivation.
Yeah.
And it's really helpful, I think, sometimes to have little examples of that, like what happens on this podcast.
Yeah, and one more quick thing. I think the reason why the panels are so useful and so helpful is because that's part of the reason why this individual figured out, yeah, I was on this panel and I just wasn't really vibing with everybody right on it, you know? And also my own wife discovered what she was by listening to panels. She said that was really the thing that caused her to go, oh, these people are my people. These people are talking my language. And so all the descriptions, all the tests really didn't get at it until she heard the panels.
Yeah, so let's get into it. Panel number 2. Joel will give an introduction and an overview of what the type is like, and then you get to hear from them. So let's do it.
Come on up, 2s. I'm thrilled because we have some newbies to the Enneagram, and we've got some folks who've been at it for a while. So this is going to be really interesting, really fun. So I'm going to begin with a short description of the 2s, and then we'll just jump in. So 2s, early on, received this message that that they were not welcomed or invited into the lives of the people that mattered to them. Somehow they felt that in order to gain access, to gain entrance into relationship, they had to forget their own needs, forget their own desires, and to take their attention and put it outward, put it on the needs of others and to care for them. They are naturally really good at it. It's part of the 2 gift.
the ability to know, to look around, to scan, to watch, to observe, and to pick up on the cues that are all around us that most of us are asleep to, but twos pick up on it. And twos are so adept at it, they work on this naturally, that they can anticipate the needs of those who they care about, those who they want to be special, in whose eyes they want to be special. And those are the people that they worked really hard at serving and caring. And so the two's attention, because it goes outward and because they become so good at helping, they forget themselves, they forget their own needs. And many times twos have to stop, and even in asking themselves, what do I need, have to work at that, have to work at getting underneath that, to discover that and to take care of themselves and not feel selfish in doing so. And so the two moves increasingly into health. And as you can see on this particular slide, twos in health move towards the four, which the four tends to be more self-aware of their own feelings, their own emotions, what's going on the inside. And in stress, the two moves towards more of a confrontational approach, which is unusual for the two. Twos tend to want to keep the peace and serve people. But in stress, when a two finds that their two-ness is not getting them what their type needs, then the two can respond by leaning into the eight. And eights are the protectors, but eights have this confrontational approach towards life. So that's a little bit about the two. But you're the two. I'm not. So you know the two better than I do. And your language will be different than mine will be for it. Twos are in the heart triad. So we're starting with the body triad, which is the eight, nine, and the one, primarily dealing with the emotion of anger. The heart triad deals much more with grief, shame, sadness as their core emotion. And they process life through the emotional center of intelligence. I'd love to hear from you guys. Does that relate? Do you relate to any of that? Or how would you describe your two-ness? Who wants to start? Who wants to be helpful and start? That's no manipulation, I promise.
You mentioned not thinking of your own needs and looking for everybody else. I've got that antenna that is constantly looking for the needs. And I just intuitively buy things, save things. I know somebody's going to need it. And going on a trip, I'll bring things that I think other people will need, so that when they say, oh, no, here you go. It's there. And you're right, I forget about my own needs.
What I love on Sunday morning is I see things when I see people. I see when someone's hurting, or I see someone sad, or because I see the facial expressions. I don't know what it is, but I can spot someone. Someone asked me one time when I sent someone else over for them for prayer, how did you know I needed it? And to me, it was just so obvious. And so you're always looking out to other people's needs. And it really does. For a two, you have to be able to tell yourself it's not selfish to not to have needs or to take time off or to. But that's true. Whenever I go away, I'm a girl. I was a Girl Scout, too. So I've got the extra things in case anybody needs them, because somebody in the family or somebody who I'm going with is absolutely going to need some of these things. And that's just a natural part of us.
I at first was not sure whether I was a two. The only thing that I really resonated with is I knew I was a companion sort. And so I was going to an Enneagram conference, and I was at the airport, and there was a woman there who was very frustrated. She had too much luggage. But the first time, they had let her take her computer on. Now they weren't letting her take her computer on. And she was so upset. And the next thing I know, I'm like, oh, it's all right. Don't worry. Well, well, let's open your suitcase. Let's put it in there. She was still so frazzled. Before it was over, I had hugged her. I was like, who does that? And it wasn't like I was thinking, that, which is a problem with twos. We don't think. There's just this, that rises from within. And so as I've gotten older, the thing that I am aware of is, or that I pay attention to, because I know when someone is speaking about something, or I know something about someone's circumstance, it's very visceral for me. And that can make me attractive to people because I can tell them exactly how it feels inside because it's so clear to me because I'm feeling it inside. And what I have to realize is, is this a part of me that is crying for me to pay attention to, rather than me just vicariously feeling some calm because I'm connected to that person and their feelings are allowing me to feel what I don't dare feel.
Hmm. Wow.
I'm Liz, and I definitely resonate with everything that's been said here. I remember when I was a little girl, I used to feel like I had this emotional covering on me, like a porcupine, like prickles everywhere that would just pick up on anything in the room, anybody around me, the person across the room. Like, why is that man sad? Why is that lady angry? And I remember just being very concerned at a young age and thinking, I don't think this is normal. I don't think I'm supposed to care about what all these other people think. But I wasn't okay until everybody else was okay, which is really funny because now I'm a special ed teacher and I work with a population of kids who are very dysregulated. A lot of them come from poverty. And the one thing that they need is a sense of safety and calm. Like you were saying, you scan. I'm constantly scanning the room, not consciously, but just being aware of where everybody is within the classroom and who might need a sensory break or who is being, if the kid starts getting mouthy and obnoxious, I'm thinking, I wonder what went on this morning. I wonder why they're doing, and so I'll take them into the hall and I'll say, what's going on? And then I always find myself saying, how can I help you? What can I do to help you today? And that's the way that I connect with my kids. And it's a way that I connect with a lot of people.
Mm. When I was young, my mother would tell me that I was always listening, even as a baby. And so when I was about the time when you learned to walk, you know how I remember when our kids learned how to walk, you're cheering them on and arms open wide. And my mom said, when you walked, you came right to me because you knew you had to protect me. And so I knew at an early age that my job was to meet other people's needs. Mm-hmm. And also that to have a connection with my parents, a connection with my mom, who dealt with a lot of depression and anxiety, I had to not have needs in order to meet her needs. And so it was easy to start ignoring the needs because you never really developed that part of myself that I had needs because somebody else's needs were always more important. But what it really did for me was meeting other people's needs means connection, means relationship, means an intimacy. And a two, when they get cut off from someone, can be devastating. We feel that rejection very, very deeply. As much as you hear some of the positive things about us, loving and caring, and there's a part of us that I had to grow through that I always felt unlovable. And so I had to prove, it to be rejected meant I wasn't lovable. So I feared that rejection because I feared I wasn't going to be loved. And the rejection wasn't just a rejection of what I did. It was a rejection of my personhood. So almost to the point of I shouldn't have existed. And so that's where the healthy part sometimes can give way to the unhealthy part. And that's where codependency comes from, enmeshment, you know, being responsible because you were craving to be connected to that person and because of the difficulty of not being connected. Do you get that? So the rejection for me is to be not loved. You know, when I sat my kids down, you know, for Mother's Day, you'll have lots of talking with them. We had a Mother's Day brunch at some place, and I always ask these little questions, and they go, oh no, she's doing the psychological thing again. But I asked my family, do you feel lovable? And they're going, what? I couldn't believe no one else thought about not being lovable. For the longest time, I'm going, really? You don't ever think about that? I've always had to think about that. As I've gotten healed, and part of my healing was that God loved me. That was that was going to be the source of me. And God had to reveal to me the lies that I had bought that brought me to that deep place. And to start understanding that my value doesn't come from other people, doesn't come from serving. And to be able to serve and to love out of love versus for love. And I think that's for the longest time it was for love.
Mm. Wow. Wow. So where do we go from here? That was a lot. That was a lot to think through. So many questions are popping up in my mind. And one of them would be this issue of rejection, because you brought that up, that, you know, if I'm not, the rejection of what I do is tied into who I am. So how is your type then helping that or sabotaging that process?
So hold rejection, and maybe rejection looks different in different ways. I guess the word I resonate with is connection and existence, that you see that I'm real. I grew up in an alcoholic household. My parents were not violent or anything like that, but there was an emotional absence. Mm. And so I'm just trying to find ground. It's not so much that I'm, unfortunately, sorry guys, I'm probably a bad two, but I'm trying to do all these nice things for people. I just want that contact and that connection. And the thing that is very frightening to me, I resonate in part with the love, because I can remember at one point thinking, even if everybody in the world loved me, it would not be enough. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that part of that is because of a guard inside of me from the absence that you introduced in the very beginning. I really appreciated how you introduced things, because as far as just speaking of the sense of, wait a minute, I'm unseen, or there's no room for me here. Mm-hmm. And the anxiety that produces inside, somehow you have to find ground. Somehow you have to find contact. You know, some of us are really great at serving. Like I said, I can speak out people's hearts for them oftentimes. Mm. And again, I think it's really important to know that there is this self-abandonment, and it's not because we're so good, but it's, I think, the fear that if we don't do these things, there will be a rejection, or, oh, I shouldn't be mad, because if I'm mad, that will break the connection. It must be my fault. I must have done something. Twos are somewhat known for being high-strung. I found that a little offensive when I heard I was hysterical. However, I have since met that part of me. I mean, I thought I was funny, but not the hysterical. But I am hysterical. I feel a lot in my body. Mm. And the greatest terror is when I can't feel love. Not just somebody else loving me. It's if I don't feel love towards someone. Because again, it all comes back to, where's the ground? Where's the connection? Mm. Where that's my...
Can you talk about how that shapes your image, your own self-image? Who are you?
because a lot of it is in this sort of reciprocal kind of relationship to people. I'd love to hear from each of you how that works for you.
So I think fundamentally, I see myself as a helper. I want to be a helper and I need to be a helper to be valued. And I think the word that comes up for me is to be worthy and to be seen in the sense of my opinions and my emotions matter, because I was told growing up that my opinions did not matter and that my emotions were incorrect. So I have a very, very brilliant father who also is on the autism spectrum. And so I was not able to identify with his emotions and is very confused by my emotions. So he would just explain to me that I was wrong, and he would tell me why I was wrong, that I was feeling sad or angry, or, you know, if I told him, I remember saying, "You're a mean daddy." And he said, "I am not a mean daddy. What is your evidence for that?" So there is a lot of having to prove myself, having to prove that I'm allowed to have certain emotions and I'm allowed to have certain opinions. And I think what's really fascinating is that I didn't feel like I had a voice when I was a child, and I had so much to say. I am so connected to kids who don't have a voice. And I feel like that's who I've been called to help. And there are so many times in the past, I was like, why have I experienced so much pain? Why have I experienced so much heartache? Why did it happen over and over and over again when I was so young? And only in the last maybe 2 years, 3 years, more and more, I keep having these kids in my path who have had really significant trauma, and that other people, other adults, other teachers don't get, or think they're weird, or are kind of overwhelmed by their, all of them. And I just feel so drawn and so connected to them. And over again, I think God is just giving me these situations, because I almost instantly connect with these kids, and I feel such a sense of joy to be able to connect with them in a way that I don't remember any adults connecting with me when I was that age and I was really crying out.
Mm. I'm going to speak of in past as far as where it was. When I had graduated from college, I was trying to figure out what was next. And I had this image of myself, and it was a water trough that people would come, they would quench their thirst, they would see their face, but they would leave. And so that made sense to me, and it took a long time till I realized that, again, I only felt alive when I was, again, connected, but useful. I felt like that I'm kind of like a light in the room that people will turn on and then they leave. And I think that I'm very transparent or very honest. And I am transparent. I am honest. But the question is, am I vulnerable? How much can really get in me? And again, because I spoke of that safety of having an emotional absence, I have a really strong guard in my deepest places, not because I want to, but it is something that I know is there that has been like a glass wall. And I want to say the Enneagram has really helped with that, because it's given me more language and definitely, just knowing God has so much helped that, because he's always inviting more.
Mm. Back in 2005, when I was let go of being a pastor, I remember going through some deep things of going, who am I? Who am I apart from that title? Who am I apart from what I do? Who am I apart from? Because that gave me the ability to to serve and to love and to care and to listen and so forth. And without that framework for me, I forgot who I was. And so I had to go through a time of discovering who I was and to feel the pain. And because we know the pain to a certain extent, it's hard to tell others about the pain. Because in some ways, not sure you're strong enough to handle it, you know, in certain pains in our lives. And it takes a lot for us to be able to share that need, share what was going on. And so who am I? I've had to go through that journey to discover that part of what I do, it comes out of who I am. And if that is centered inside, if that's centered in God really meeting me in those places, then I'm able to love. But you talked about the disconnect. I wasn't really feeling that connection until I had that deep connection with God. For us, it's grace. It's hard to receive grace because, you know, for me, if I can do all these good things, and if I did one thing, mistake, or one thing, it was really devastating for me because then it meant I rejected myself as well. And so when I cut myself off from me, then that's a really tough thing to move through. And it took God to be able to be that solidifying force inside of me because love was never, it wasn't enough because I wanted more from people in that connection to be felt, feel that love in the core of my being from God is what I needed to be able to start believing because I didn't, I believed he wanted to more fun with someone else, you know, as a younger child. But to know that his love will never go away. And that creates that solid base for which to grow on for me.
I know, I feel that I'm gifted to be a giver and a helper. I guess that's a huge part of my image. When I can't do that, it is devastating. I had a very serious injury back in 2001. Totally disabled for about 7 years. And during that time, I couldn't work. I couldn't walk hardly. So it was like I was crushed. I couldn't interact with others because I couldn't tolerate being on my feet or running around more than 4 hours a day. That was like the tops. And then my body was screaming in pain, and I'd have to be laying down, all pressure off my spine. So I didn't have the interaction with others. They weren't getting the help from me that they normally got, so they didn't need me anymore. it was actually my family, this is what you mentioned, a big part of that. Like what I noticed from them was anytime they wanted something or needed something repaired, they called me. And it was never to do stuff. It was always to help them. And when I got injured, I realized that there were no dinners coming to my door. There were no people calling me and saying, "Can I help you? Do you have everything you need?" There was nothing. Nothing. And so I started an experiment that continued for about 8 or 9 years. And I said, "I'm not going to call any one of them. I'm going to see who calls me." And to date, 2 sisters out of 7 siblings. 1 sister all the time. The other sister, the youngest, when she was getting married, and another time when she needed to know my address because they were doing background checks for her job. So you feel used, big time used, and you want to withdraw.
Wow. Thank you for being this vulnerable. And to all of you for being this vulnerable, this is, I mean, this is like heavy stuff and precious what he's entrusted into our hands
is his story, his vulnerability. And so,
look, twos like to go deep. We like to go real deep.
Intense.
And we're intensive.
You can, yeah, you can tell when someone's hurting, the twos just go, I get some, I can fix that. I can resolve. This is great. Like, it's because there's such, and it's not like I'm really happy you're hurting. That can, that's, it's not that, right? Because for you guys, it's really, there's a sense of tremendous confidence that, you know, give me a chance at this. I can really fix this. I can help you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But a funny thing about it too is learning about how much to help. When my son used to come home from, you know, when they're growing up, food is their biggest love language, in college and so forth. And he would come home and I would say, hey, you hungry? You want something? He'd say, I'm not really sure. And I would start listing the things in the refrigerator that I had already made ahead of time for him. And one time he came home from Chicago, I had more of his favorite food in the refrigerator than he could possibly eat in the 3 days he was going to be there. And so I would start naming, you know, one thing. And, no, Mom, that's fine. I'm okay. And I keep going and I'm going. And then, Mom. And then I feel, oh, I'm doing that Mom thing again. Okay. So I stopped naming all the things for him. What I find myself sometimes is I want to be that helpful because I know, like, for instance, we're in there in our life group having dinner before we come here. And I want people to enjoy the food and enjoy being with together. And so when I find myself asking people if they want to join us, if I start doing it more than once and I do it twice, I'm going, okay, they're responsible for their own hunger or their own way of coming. I need to let it go. It's not my problem. So I did that to you last week. And this week I said, I'm only asking once. You don't show up, you lose. But it makes it funny because you're able to stop yourself from wanting to do something good for you. And also, that's also part of making a connection because we need to make those connections.
Hmm.
I just was struck with the two of you particularly stating where it was kind of in a place where the rug was pulled out from underneath you, that awareness came. And I think that's a thing that, again, you know, we are called famous for not knowing our own needs. And again, that's in part because, like I'm sure many of you in your own way, we have a lot being spoken inside. And I can remember that when I was younger, I'd have these bouts of depression. And I came to realize what they were was timeouts. They gave me permission to be quiet because I didn't know how to ask for that. Because you're not that tired. You're not this. You're not that. Because there's this negative critic. We remember our next door neighbor, the one that's very active. So when you ask how you view your identity, I feel grateful for revelations like, oh, I don't have to be depressed to just go to bed or to say I'm tired. Or I had an experience where I went for some counseling. And in the counseling, they were talking with me about my parents. And they said on a scale of, well, they did this type of work with you where they, it's called the MDR, so they go back and forth and back and forth. And you're meant to be picturing your parents. And I couldn't even have my parents in the same room. But as I'm picturing them, then the man stopped. And I have to tell you, this was my first time of being in therapy with this man. So I was spending my whole time going, Jesus, 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 because I was a little nervous. But so, so the guy stops and he goes, okay, what are you thinking? And out of the blue, I go, rigid. And he's like, okay, just go back into thinking about your parents. And then he stops. He goes, okay, what are you thinking? Starving children in Africa. Where is this coming from? And then, you know, he gets to the end and he goes, okay, how are you feeling as far as your parents? And I said, I feel a 10 because I so want my parents. to come together. I so want all of us to be together. And I feel zero because I know nothing works. And then he goes to me, so how are you doing? And I go, well, I just hope I'm getting something out of this. And but then it was an amazing thing to me because I prayed about it. And God led me to Ephesians 3, where it talks about knowing the height and the depth, but knowing this love that is beyond comprehension. And all of a sudden, you know, here I am going, starving children in Africa. Like, where did that come from? And all of a sudden, I heard God say, that's you. And it was like that game Operation, where, you know, you go in and you're picking up something. So all of a sudden, it was like, oh, there's someone in there. And it was so amazing to me. Mm. And you know how in Psalm 139, it says, we are full of years. I know that full well. I was like, oh, I am a well. There is all of this in me. And it was the coolest. I went and had communion on that Sunday. And I gave that little skeleton girl communion. And so you asked me how I view myself now. I long to just be what I'm called to be, which is a little I am. Mm-hmm. And I don't really want more than that. I just want to be I am because I know that if I am, then I really am given to you. And if I am, I will have some ground. I will know my ground beneath me. So I won't have to borrow your ground. I won't have to come and be a guest in your house in order to feel like I have a home.
Wow. Wow. That's a mic drop right there. Wow. That is so profound. Amazing. This is the thing that kills me is we only have an hour and I have like 20 more. I just don't know which one to pick. So which one would you like to answer?
I do adult coloring books during church, and as anything that comes to me, I'll write down. So I did bring two different things that I'd like to share with you guys. Maybe now would be a good time to do that.
Sure.
So the first one is I took the transformation course over the summer, and at the very last session, I had a really deep experience where I was thinking a lot about my dad and what the point of it was, like that kind of why are we all here kind of question, specifically in relation to my dad. And the message that I got from God was, it says, I sent you to help each other. And in the moment when I got that, it felt like lightning traveling through my body, that I was sent to help my father with some of the pain that he had experienced, and that he was sent to help me to become the person that I was. And I think it shows that I'm a two, because the fact that that simple statement was so profound and so deep and so comforting to me was pretty remarkable. Mm. And the other one is a lot more recent, and this one doesn't have a lot around it at all, but what I got was I started this one in November, and I was praying about my job. My job is really stressful, and there are a lot of elements of it that I don't like, that I'd say that I hate, that I don't get to focus on the kids. There's a lot of bureaucracy and paperwork and stuff. And I got the message, I know you don't understand right now, but you will. I just kept praying on that and praying on that. And in February, during one of Joel's sermons, I got, you are worthy. Whether or not you teach, whether or not you help, you are worthy. You are worthy.
Mm. Beautiful. Wow.
I think, at least for myself, but now that I'm learning about twos, we have a particular way of being that I think it trains people how to respond to us. And sometimes there's jerks in the crowd there of those people, and they use you. And it's those things that hurt.
Mm.
But it will never stop me from giving.
Mm.
I just love to give.
Mm.
I think that's a great phrase, that we train people to expect things. And I think that even when you might become aware that you don't want to be doing something, the thought of what would I do if I'm not doing something? I might just float off into nowhere. Mm. And so this at least I have contact. And the things that help me emotionally, the things that I've been practicing the most are things to try and help me slow down. Because again, I feel a lot, I have a lot of energy in me. And that needs to be calmed. So our bodies are really important to us. I write a lot. I will even do the type of writing where you're going to wait to listen for an answer or something. So I have to stay a little longer, even though part of me might be saying, yeah, but I really should be doing this, or I could be doing that, or, oh gosh, I really want to get outside because I want to do everything at once, you know, and except for the self-care part. And so the practices that I have been doing more so now are ones that totally seem like a waste of time. Like I have to say, when you say, let's do that breathing exercise thing, I hate that. Yeah. Okay.
Me too. That's why I have you guys do it. And I just sit back and do something else, you know.
When I breathe, I sound like the heater over there. Did you notice how it goes? Like it gets to like here and then I'm out of here, you know? So I have to lie down to breathe in order that it goes to my stomach. So that's one of the things I've been doing. I've been lying down for 15 minutes and practicing being held and knowing that God's got me. My newest thing is taking Epsom salt baths. The reason with the Epsom salt thing is, for one thing, you're meant to stay in there at least 12 minutes. And but also, like, don't you think it's so ridiculous? I'm just pouring this white junk in the water and I'm expecting a miracle as I'm sitting in there, because all those particles that look like, you know, nothing are going to go into my bones. And so I'm like, okay, God, I really need to be able to receive. I really need to be able to take in. And so I'm taking Epsom baths. I'm trying to build my capacity.
Mm.
Or one last thing is, one time Scott, that's my husband, came downstairs into the kitchen and all the cupboards were wide open. And he goes, oh, Louise, that's just like you. I was so insulted because I thought I had really gotten a lot better, you know, at holding what's my own and giving what's for others rather than me, you know, like I can so relate with the sons. You know, I have two sons and I'm like buying everything and jam it in the refrigerator so it doesn't close. But okay, so the discipline that I took on, because I really took it to heart when Scott said that, was I started for that year closing the cupboards. And every time I would close them, I would say, please, God, help me to hold what is mine and to know when to give away, to know when to open. Help me to know my own container.
Mm. Wow.
I definitely awesome. Resonate with that. One thing I wanted to make sure to touch on is that something that I've heard a lot about twos is that twos are not aware of their needs, their own needs. And I feel like I've always been very aware of my needs. Most of the time I know exactly what I need to go from to get back to a place of health, but I don't feel like I deserve it. I feel like other things need to come first. Work comes before play. Taking care of my child comes before taking care of myself. I have to get X, Y, and Z done before I'm allowed to take a break and do something for myself. So for me, I was I'm curious if this resonates with other twos. One of the best images I have, you know, when you go on the plane and they're talking at the beginning about safety measures and they say, if oxygen falls, place your mask on yourself first before assisting others. I very frequently will grab that oxygen mask and start shoving it at everybody around me to make sure that they have oxygen while I'm holding my breath. And then eventually I'll get mine on. And so I'm trying to learn that actually, if I put mine on first, I am better able to assist others. Part of that, you know, I love art. I have a minor in art. So I'm trying to tap back into that in a number of ways. And I've also done meditation for a number of years. And I'm growing in that discipline. And that feels really luxurious to me. So I feel very audacious when I say to my family, I am going upstairs and I'm meditating for a half hour. See you later.
So good.
The discipline and the spiritual growth is to be and to slow the world down a little bit.
I can't say that I'm as honorable, at least in my consciousness, now that I'm older, of when I am under compulsion to give. It can be because that is so much safer than having to be with whatever is stirring in me. I want to quiet that. So I'm going to go and find something to get away from it. So I think that my brand at times could look like I'm very brave because I can put myself out there sometimes, but sometimes I am just putting myself out there to get away from the terror that is inside of me. And the whole thing of receiving is because it's a dangerous place. I don't ever want to feel, even though I can't even remember really what it feels like, to not have that need met inside. And so I can crowd it out. You know?
So a huge thank you to our two panel and to all of you for listening. We did tell you at the beginning of the episode that there was one person who misidentified themselves as a two and later realized they were the four. And when we get to the four panel interview, you will hear the kinds of language that this person used sounds very reminiscent of what you will hear in the four interview. So you may have spotted it, but here's a little clip of this person talking in a way that I think give some of that foreness away.
I used to feel like I had this emotional covering on me, like a porcupine, like prickles everywhere that would just pick up on anything in the room, anybody around me, the person across the room.
So if you've tried to go on this journey a little bit and experienced any frustration, that is normal. A lot of people struggle as they try to figure out really where they land and what's going to be the next step for them. Some people are really obvious and they know their type right away, and others struggle to find it over time. And so regardless where you are, we would just encourage you to continue on the pursuit, and you will get there. You will figure out not only what you are, but what are your steps to grow as you realize what you're motivated by. Of course, the best way to find out what your number really is to do a typing interview with an Enneagram coach like Joel. So you can find out more about coaching and from Joel at www.joelhubbard.com. This podcast is produced by Talkie Records Studio in Lynn, Massachusetts, and made possible by Vine 39 Church in Stoneham, Massachusetts. Thank you so much for joining us.